Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I'm just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and happy Shabbat to one and all. We're here with a full cast of characters. I hope we're viewed as having character, but we're certainly characters. We've got Captain Kirk and JB. Good evening, fellas.
Good evening.
How's it going?
We're in a have a treat tonight. I'm going to read, although he doesn't know I'm going to read 16, but I have to read 16 to make 17 make sense. This is Bereshit, Genesis 16 and 17. I'm going to read 18. And Kirk has done a comparison of these amplified translations and what he has learned on his own to what is revealed in the King Iams Bible, so that we just might have a good contrast between why it is that Christians have no concept whatsoever of who God is, because they have no concept of what he actually said. And you really can't know him unless you know what he said. It really is kind of that simple. You know, I was reading an article today. I was at lunch with, read an article. And the article was, Evangelical Pastors are supporting one of the world's, probably the world's most famous pimp. The fellow owns a significant number of brothels in Nevada. And he has won the Republican nomination for a district that he will most certainly be elected, because the district is almost universally Republican. And these Christian pastors, evangelical pastors, were all supportive of it. And the one guy that's the most famous pastor in this particular district said that the moment that he heard that this fellow was running, now, mind you, he is the most famous pimp in America and owns more brothels than probably anyone in America. We've talked about this before. I recognize something that Christians don't recognize, that Yahweh is not a cosmic buzzkill, that Yahweh created men and women. He thinks that he created us in a very attractive way. He specifically created Eve in a way that would endear her to Adam, so that Adam would find her attractive. And, you know, from my perspective, I think Yah did a really, really good job.
Agreed.
His best work ever. That's just our opinion as his three guys here. But the fact is that prostitution, brothel, is a long way from Yahweh's reason for having created women. And if you look at cultures that were really depraved, and deprived of God, like the Greek culture and the Roman culture. Brothels filled with all manner of despicable things, and emperors who were in all manner into all manner of despicable things prevailed. So anyway, the lead pastor, the evangelical pastor, said the moment he heard that that this pimp and brothel owner had prevailed, he got on his knees. And the argument wasn't to to say, "Oh God, don't let this happen." It was to thank God for empowering this man, and for God raising up a man of truth and honor who would protect religion. As I was reading that, I said, you know, the Christian God is as despicable, as disgusting as the Christian pastors. It's just reprehensible. You know, it's kind of like these dudes saying, I need a $50 million airplane. I want you to pray about it. And send me a check.
Write me a check.
Yeah, and if Jesus were to come back, it's for sure he wouldn't be riding on a donkey. Oh, yeah? Why do you think he did the first time? Don't you get it? The difference between the real God and you, you disgusting piece of worm rot? The real God is humble. He's not a money grubber. He's humble and you're not. You can't cop an attitude with God. Be part of his team. Anyway, I just had to throw that in because as Kirk went over the comparison between really caring about what Yahweh said and listening to what he had to say. Being an active listener, that's one of the things we talked about before the show began. And Kirk got JB that got had a laugh out of it. He says, next time I interrupt my wife, I'll tell her I'm just being an active listener, dear. An active listener is somebody that hears something and wants to react to it. You know, wants to say, yeah, I love that point. And even you consider that it even, goes beyond this or wants to probe deeper in what has just been said. That's an active listener. Other people would say that's a rude person that interrupts and is a loud person. But, in my defense here, I think every member of the covenant, when they listen to and read what Yahweh has to say, are engaged in active listening. That's how we have our conversations with Yahweh. We are active listeners. And so I think in this context, it's something that works. Okay, so the lead-in is, and the spiritual messenger, the divine implement, the heavenly representative of Yahweh, called out Kara to Abraham a second time from the sky above, and he said, by myself I have made a promise, and I have sworn an oath, prophetically announces Yahweh, because indeed, for the benefit of the relationship, you have acted and engaged in accordance with the word, and therefore you have not withheld your son, your unique, special, and beloved child. Oh, my goodness. No faith. Sorry, Paul. No, I'm not sorry, Paul. You were despicable. Abraham was not righteous and therefore saved because of faith. He acted and engaged in accordance with the word, not in violation of it. And with the end, therefore you have not withheld your unique, special, and beloved child, your son. That is actually an explanation of the word of Yahweh, the word turned flesh. Therefore, I will kneel down in love to lift you up, enriching and blessing you. Barak, barak, Atah. And I will, to an extraordinary degree, magnify and multiply. And I will abundantly increase the importance and magnitude, Rabbah, Rabbah, of your offspring. Similar to the light of the stars. spiritual realm and the abode of God, but also like the coarse sand, which is upon the lips of the sea. In addition, your offspring shall inherit, and some shall impoverish, the thinking of his enemies. This leads us to the final statement regarding the covenant. It is brought to us by the Hitpael stem. And so long as they act independently and are not swayed by societal influences, people of every ethnicity on earth shall be blessed. While Barak Kol Goyim Ha Eretz, by way of your descendants. This reward is a consequence and is merited because to show the way to the benefits of an upright and elevated state with a joyful attitude and to encourage walking the correct way along the proper and specific path to life in response to this guidance about pursuing the relationship the correct way. You have actually listened to my voice. Shama Bakol Ani. You have heard me speaking to you, and if I may add, and have been a very active listener. Barishit, Genesis, in the beginning. 22, 16, 17, and 18. By the way, I think our last comment, it can easily be derived from Shama Ba Kol Ani, particularly in the case, in the context of you've acted engaged based upon my word.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, it's yours.
Okay. Well, you know, as I was reading that, what I generally do is I'll go to the whatever the text is. I'll go to the Masoretic, and then I'll cross-check it with Dead Sea Scrolls, if available. And I'll just look up every word for as deep as I can, and then I'll go back and read your commentary and your expanded, definitions as well, and see if I've missed anything, if I got the same thing that you got, that can I see how you got to where you got, because when you compare it, most of the times it's far beyond what you would read in an English translated Bible. And when I was reading this, going back to this one on 22:17, I made a note out to the side. This is almost a reversal of the English translations. It's it exposes King James as Yarish, impoverished.
Yes, impoverished.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was looking at that and I said, well, you know, and I have a, Perry and I have a 26 translation Bible from long ago. And what that is it takes the 26 top English Bible translations and it takes any verse and it'll list all the ones that are different from the King James. It'll tell the King James first, and then it'll say, okay, and this one is slightly different than this one, and it'll make a notation.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if, rather than comparing them to the King James,
mm-hmm.
they compare them to the
Court? Well, we're about to only place.
Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Well, what a concept, huh?
Yeah. Well,
those weren't authorized.
They're only authorized by the creator of the universe.
Not by King James.
Not by King I am. Impoverished. Think about the word impoverished.
Okay.
You know, the whole concept of the covenant is to enrich.
Mm-hmm.
That's the purpose of Shavuah, is to enrich. The whole idea of the covenant is we inherit the estate of God. We're enriched by it. To be disinherited is to be impoverished. It's to say, no matter how many riches you may have in this world, no matter how many accolades you may have in this world, how many possessions you may own or control, you are impoverished if you don't know and act upon the word of Yahweh. And impoverished is just such a perfect definition of the King James and other English Bibles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, occasionally I get asked, and have over the years, how you came to this rather expansive translation. And you can say, yes, well, you look up all the letters, all the words, rather, and you can look at the letters even, and you can go to the grammar, and you can extrapolate from that. But there's also, I always tell them, the bigger picture is, and the reason is probably most helpful for you to read Yada Yah or Intro to God and Question and Paul. So that, and now this one by Yada Yah it helps you get your perspective right, so you understand the big things that Yahweh is trying to say that will apply to almost everything you read. And when I look at yours at 22:17, you've got it's pretty easy in the Baruch. As far as him kneeling down in love to lift you up and enriching and blessing you, and referring, and in here we're also referring to because he's going to multiply you and magnify you, which you wrote, and that's totally correct because it's referring to the Moed Mikras. I mean, that's what we've been talking about all this time to begin with. This is the story of one of the Moed Mikras, or three, the first three. In relation to Abraham, the Abraham story. So you have both in the background.
What's so interesting, Kirk, is that that most people just want to translate Baruch as to bless.
Yeah.
But the primary meaning of Baruch is to kneel down in a manner that shows your affinity or affection or concern or care or desire to help, to lift up someone. You know, the blessing of Baruch is by kneeling down with this attitude of wanting to lift up in love and appreciation.
Yeah.
So when it's Yahweh doing the blessing, it's literally God getting down on his knees as our Heavenly Father to lift up his covenant children.
Which is a concept a Christian can't stand.
Oh, of course.
And a preacher, and certainly a Christian preacher can't stand because that reverses the role.
Right, but imagine the Christian concept is deplorable. I mean, it's so pathetic. First of all, a God that would want an animal he created, a vastly inferior being, to praise him, to try to lift him up, is reprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
It says that God is insecure. It says that his whole reason for creation was because he was insecure, because he was needy, and that somehow he would get his jollies of an inferior being placating him. It's just disgusting. And think about it from a practical point of view. Yahweh is bigger by an infinite degree than all six dimensions of our universe. Yeah. Than all the dimensions of our universe that we can even imagine, and we can't even lift up a tiny, 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 tiny fraction of 1% of that which is around us. How in the hell, puny man, could you lift up God?
Yeah.
And particularly when God is saying, and the other side is, if you know God as he is, you immediately recognize that the role he enjoys most and the entire purpose of creation was he wanted a family, that he wanted children to raise, that he wanted to enjoy the role of both father and mother, and enrich and enlighten and liberate, enlighten his children, wanted to lead them and to guide them, wanted to enjoy their company. And when we recognize that we were created as men and women to model Yahweh's desire for us, and when we have little children and we can walk beside them, mom and dad on either side, and the little child raises up their hands to reach for mom and dad's hand, that's the whole image we see in Yahweh's name in the original letters. That's the essence of the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Yahweh said to Dod, about Dod, he is my son, and I am his father.
But in your translations, too, there's a few other little overviews that kind of hit me before I go on to tell you what the King James, how poorly they butcher it, or how well they butcher it, I should say. There's a condition applies. These conditions for this blessing, it is implied that they are only if they continue to shamar. And that's the thing that runs through the whole thing. It's an ongoing process, and you are continuing to be part of that process and be actively engaged, as opposed to, I guess, whatever the Christians think, one shot and it's over, or whatever they like. I'm getting so far removed from it, I forget some of the doctrine. But
yeah.
So that's also incorporated there, which explains a little bit of how I think you came to write this. And then there's also a little bit later, and I will read the King James. There is a two divisions of Abraham's descendants, Yishak and Yisrael, and those are in there. That's implied on the people that he's inheriting, as we see at the end of the sentence here. And then, of course, keep in mind there's also a language that destroys and ruins. There's a word in here, so when you break down all these words, you'll come up with exactly what you've said. But if you read the King James and you just translate it the way they do, let me show you the difference on how where they went versus where you went. Indeed, it says, I will greatly bless you, Barak, and I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sands which is on the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gates of their enemies. And that's a lot missing there based on on the way you approach it. Now, I was thinking, how the heck did they get there? And why didn't they see these other things that you saw and that I could see after I broke down every word? And if you look up Barak, the first thing they say in Barak is to go to, is to kneel by implication to bless God. Well, we just beat that one to death. You know? And
right.
It's not
by the way,
this
one happens
God.
To be God blessing us.
Yes, totally opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, this is God speaking, so this is God blessing us, not us trying to bless God.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not us kneeling down, this is God kneeling down.
So
I was speaking here, folks.
Yeah. Who is I? Therefore, I will kneel down. Who is speaking? Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So then you have Rabbah, which is to increase, and to whatever respect, and that's fine. But to them, they says, and I will greatly multiply your seed as stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore. But that's a little bit misleading there. He's talking about stars in the sense that the increase of his seed, his zera, the star is Kalkab, which is a star or shining or light. But the sand is Chal, but the sand is swirling particles and turning and whirling is what they usually will give you, so they don't have any problem. They can just say, well, these are just little particles. We're talking about an infinite number of things. I'm going to spread your seed as greatly as the stars and as greatly as the sand.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look up child, it's coarse sand. That's a negative connotation.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about the two children or the two descendants or two divisions, basically, overall, of Abraham's children. Those of Yishak, which will become like, and those who are like Ishmael, or in the case of Jacob and Esau, like Esau, and they will be the enemies. So then when you get down to the thing where it says in the King James, and your seed shall possess the gates of their enemies, God's not really excited about them. His children, Yishak and Jacob, taking over the gates of their enemies. It's one thing to be protected.
By a vibrant, But as a matter of fact, neither did.
No.
Right? Neither.
Right.
Neither Yishak nor Jacob were conquerors, were they?
No.
No. So,
they didn't do anything to run people out of God's home. But
right. You've got to think of very what's the story with these people. So, it most certainly, neither of them did that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So when they get to that, they're possessing...
Can I interrupt with one more second? Just
sure.
Interrupt one second. Okay, think about all of Yisrael. Think about all of Yisrael. Can you tell me the number of times that Yisrael went outside of Yisrael to conquer a people? Now, if you're talking about the gates of your enemies, then it would have to be Yisrael going into Gaza and conquering the Philistines. It would have to be Israel going into Egypt and conquering the Egyptians. It would have to be Israel going into Rome and conquering the Romans, going into Greece and conquering the Greeks. Is there a single situation where Israel of the Hittites, yeah. Now, there are times with Yahweh's help, the Israelites prevailed over the Amalekites and the Philistines and others, but it was always in Israel. Are there any notable situations where this prophecy would be true if it's, I will allow you to conquer or prevail against the gates of your enemies? Their gates, therefore in their territory.
Well, think about it. Saul and then later Samuel,
mm-hmm.
he stopped at Elarish, which is right on the border
of Egypt.
And that's still Israel's territory. His last conquest was there. When and the rest of it, they went no further north than places they were already given to some of the 12 tribes.
Mm-hmm.
So into the
they
north.
Took back
so they just didn't go there. They didn't conquer anybody outside of the land that was given to them. There's no record of it anywhere.
No.
So in this context, if you translate it the way they translate it, you would imply that they've taken over Rome and taken over the USA and all the other, and they don't.
Right. And you can't even apply it to the half a dozen cities that the Israelites conquered, some like Jericho, by simply walking around them, because while their gates fell, there is no evidence that Jericho was an enemy of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Was there?
No.
There was no indication that I or any of these other cities that fell were enemies of Israel. They were just the wrong people in the wrong place.
Yeah.
At the wrong time.
Okay.
Yeah, but they weren't enemies of Israel. Yahweh wanted his house cleansed of vermin. He wanted the plague removed from the home before his children entered. And therefore, they had to be removed. But they weren't removed because they were enemies of Israel. They had to be removed because they were enemies of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't even include them.
They were an instrument of Yahweh's at that time, but that was it.
Yeah. So,
well,
there is no way. There's no way. It just can't be as the King James says, because there's not a single instance where that was the case, and it would have to be the prevalence situation for this prophecy to have be the conclusion of the covenant. It would have to be the norm rather than an exception, and we can't even come up with an exception.
No. Well, and to that, to further that discussion, even it is imperative that he did that as far as wiping out or cleaning up Jerusalem or Israel, because he just took them out of Egypt, the center of religion and politics, and he goes on throughout the entire Torah. This is the bad guy. This is the enemy. This is the thing
don't be around it
to have.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, you did probably the best study ever on the Canaanite religion, which was Babylonian, which was Roman Catholic Catholicism. And that is pervasive throughout Israel when they get there. And if he doesn't throw that out, then he's brought them back to be nothing. He should have left them
right.
In.
Yeah, should have. It's like saying I'm going to take you away from a house where you're mistreated and bring you into a house that's so filled with plague, you're certain to die.
Yeah.
Well, it's well, God. That was really fun.
Thanks, I guess.
And then if you apply that to years later when they absolutely, the Ephraimites all become so religious and so Canaanite, so adaptive of the Canaanite religion, Yahweh finally says, well, look, if you want it so much, go ahead and do it, but you ain't going to do it here. And he takes them over to Babylon. He's very consistent.
Right.
If that's what you want, good, I'll take you there.
You can have it. Yeah, I'm going to get free will and all.
But not in my house.
If you want it, you can do that. You're just not going to do it in my house.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and just to further the point, just a little bit on this weird way to translate.
Mm-hmm.
When he talks about the seas, self-possessed, the gates, enemies, and all, if you, the difference between yours and his is you know what shafar means, and of course it is can be shore and it can be an edge, but it's also language.
Yeah.
And the language that he's talking about is language against the Torah, against Yahweh. Yoresh is to occupy. They would just say occupy, possess, to possess in their place or to seize. But it also means to rob and to expel and to impoverish and to ruin.
Mm-hmm.
Shor, they just usually say gate or door or opening. But this also means to calculate, to reckon, or how one thinks. All you got to do is look it up, and it gives you all those definitions. So, and then let me just further one, the last one, is hating an adversary or an enemy or a foe, but is also it defines the enemy that he's hating, and but all these words combined. You wrote, in addition, your offering shall inherit and impoverish the thinking of his enemies. And so who is doing that? Well, that's the descendants of Abraham who become the Christians or become the perpetuate the Canaanite religion and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
These are very negative things within the positive thing.
Yeah, in fact, I think I blew it last week. Last week when we were talking about which I said, listen, the Yahweh blessing us, kneeling down to lift us up and offering the covenant offspring to be like the light of the stars in the spiritual realm. That's obvious. That's the essence of the promise. We become light, which means we're perfect. We're enlightened. We're like Yahweh. We can enter the seventh dimension. It's just that is the ultimate offer. And then I said, you know, there's also a aspect of Joel that could be quite positive. And what I said is that, and also like the coarse sand, which suggests that while the coarse sand of the sea is infinitesimal by compared to the magnitude of stars, that shows this ability to transition from spiritual to material. And and all the wonderful things that really come along with this transition from spiritual to material, even though it's a tremendous diminishment at the square of the speed of light. And I can see that. But you know something?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just me enjoying Yahweh.
Yeah.
I think that the more correct, not that answer was incorrect, Kirk, it's or your TV.
Yeah,
I think it means
a lot.
Yeah, I think the more correct answer is that what Yahweh says here is that therefore I will kneel down to lift you up, enriching and in blessing you, and I will to an extraordinary degree magnify you. This is like E equals MC squared to magnify you, to increase the importance and magnitude, similar to the light of the stars in the realm of heaven. Full stop. New sentence. But also. Law. Like the coarse sand, the enormity of the sorrow and withering agony associated with circular reasoning and whirling swords, which inflict torturous suffering, which is upon the words, the speech, the language of the sea. Synonymous with Gentiles and his religious customs.
That's politics. Well, that's what I get out of it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that is far more the point that God is making.
Well, everything leads to that. I mean, if you do it, I won't go into any depth on all those things because we did them before, but it's still the, and they're also in your writing, but on the, in that regard, all that can be found there. And the tragedy of it all is the greatness of it is you found it, and everyone now can find it. And what's the tragedy is they can't find it. Now, is it just their minds are so closed they can't find it, or are they that deceptive? I think they probably just don't get it.
Yeah, and it's clear. I mean,
follow the company line.
Right. There is absolutely no question that Shapah means primarily lips, mouth, words, speech, language.
Yes.
That's its primary connotation. And then secondarily, edge, boundary, bank, and shoreline. And it's interesting that it's from the verbal root, kafah, those who are swept and snatched away, caught up.
Yeah, that makes me think of Paul. You know.
Oh, God, yeah, and his rapture?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No way.
Caught up and harpazo, snatched away. It also caused me to think of Yosha when he poked fun at the wolf in sheep's clothing and used the verbal root, which he actually used the Hebrew, and so it was translated using the verbal root into to Greek of the same harpazo, speaking of what the wolf in sheep's clothing would do to God's chosen, his children, the Israelites. So absolutely, this plucked away and snatched away, yeah, it's a direct allusion to the ultimate plague of death, Paul.
Now, if you knew that and you were a Christian, you either have to walk away or you have to continue the deception.
Correct.
Unless your soul.
Unless you choose to ignore it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but then they choose to ignore it. Primarily because either the Septuagint was erroneous, or the Latin Vulgate was erroneous, or the initial five translations of the Latin Vulgate into English were erroneous, and therefore the King James was erroneous, and that from that point on, the only way you could make a profit and earn a living selling bibbles, babbles, if you will,
was to tell the lie.
Was to replicate the lie. If you don't replicate the lie, you aren't going to sell babbles. That's just the bottom line. Anybody, if you were to choose to do what we've done here and create an accurate rendering of Yahweh's words, and therefore present that which is almost the antithesis of what you'll find in your Christian Babel, no one would buy it.
Yeah,
we give it away.
How much money you made off all of these, Craig? You're just rolling in the dough.
Yeah,
I
probably lost
enough to buy these books from you, right?
Yeah, I probably lost maybe over the years $300,000, $400,000. And this maybe $500,000 negative. Greatest investment I've made in my life. Would do it all again if I lost 10 times that. If I haven't lost anything. That was the biggest investment I ever made. Yeah. It wasn't a sacrifice. It wasn't a sacrifice. You don't even think of it. It was what a joy. What a joy. And then to have Yahweh acknowledge us. And speaking of us being a twig, a little branch out there, and of us composing this neck, this sign that he would lift up. Oh, man, what more could you do with your life? And, you know, beyond all that, if not one person acted upon the translations that we've tried to create of Yahweh's word, amplified and accurate,
it'd still be worth it.
Still have been the greatest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
Most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. Even if I was the only person to benefit, even if it was just me and my son.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been.
Well, it was just Abraham. Right. It was just
right.
That small thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
If we did these shows and not a single person was listening, it's still worth it because we all learn from each other on this show.
Correct.
We all come away with a greater knowledge and understanding every week than we went into it with. So it's
correct.
Worth doing.
Right. The highlight of the week.
Yeah, it is for me.
Yeah. And the more we prepare, the more we think about what we're going to do, the more we put into it, the more we get out of it.
Well, I spent the whole week studying Question Paul, and then at the last minute, I looked at this and I said, because of email, and I got thinking about that email and how hard it is to translate because of these things, and trying to think about when I first started doing this years ago. So it comes a lot easier now, and I'm pretty pretty good on certain points that I know this has to be true. Therefore, something's wrong there. You know, when I look at it, and then you can just keep digging through and plowing through it, and you can find it, and you go, well, of course, it's obvious that that's what y'all was saying. So, but it's very hard. I'm sure it's quite hard for people who are just now starting to translate a little bit, and I do get emails from time to time from people who want to do that. So it's, I feel your anxiety when you read. I mean, I don't know how many letters you've gotten that say, what Bible should I be studying from?
Oh, yeah. Can you tell me what I recommend the best translation?
There aren't any. You other than you can read these translations, but you need to get to a Masoretic and a Dead Sea Scroll and mm-hmm. put it all together and start doing it yourself to reinforce that. That
I give them a list of the lexicons I most commonly use.
Yeah, a lot of people need to
interlinear and tell them that's the way to go.
I do tell people that, you know, what I would do initially is to study what I've already provided. Just study it. And then every time you hear something, you say, well, you know, that really sounds interesting, but how do I know it's true? Look up the word. And it's written in such a way that you could copy and paste, if you're doing an electronic medium, copy and paste that word into Google and say Hebrew English meaning, and then put in the word Chowl, Chowl. And what you're going to find is there'll be three or four resources that come up that will give you a definition. And look at it, particularly look and see if there's a verbal root. Study all the words that are similar to it, and verify that, just Kirk, as you're doing, and JB, as you've done something good, verify that, yes, this is a reasonable and accurate rendering of this word. And if you do that 100 times, and 99 out of 100 times you say, yeah, I get there. Then one time you say, yeah, I still don't really know, but I'll press on. I was, you know, 99% is pretty good. And then you do it another 100 times and another 100 times. Pretty soon you won't feel the need for verification. What you'll do is just read. And the reason I say this, as opposed to starting off with your own lexicons and stuff and try to translate, is that you need a foundation.
Yeah.
You know, I think that what we did originally, which was to start with a really corrupted slate, because I was both political and religious. The mindset that you need to go into it and say, you know, I'm going to learn Hebrew, I'm going to learn to read this stuff and translate it, and I'm going to go where the words lead, no matter what they say. I'm going to learn about the grammar, and I'm going to learn about these definitions, and I'm going to render it as accurately as possible, and then I'm going to try to reconcile why this is so different than what you find in your Christian Babels, and continue to build on that. That's a mindset and a devotion of time that is just probably pretty rare. And so I think it would be just, it behooves most people to do, you know, I think of Jackie now. Jackie's such a great example of this. Someone who started off by reading, and she read and read and read and built up a foundation of knowledge, and that led to understanding, and now she has some of the most profound and interesting insights of anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would still be my recommendation for most people, is that since there are 7 volumes of Yada Yada, you know, they average about, 600, 700, 800 pages a volume, and since there are 5 volumes of an Introduction to God, since there are 2 volumes, or excuse me, there's 2 volumes of an Introduction to God, there are 5 volumes, oh, excuse me, yeah, 5 of an Introduction to God, 2 of Observations for Our Time, there's Questioning Paul, that you put it all together, and there are just thousands upon thousands of pages of translations, insights, and commentary. Start there. Start there.
What I tell people to do, and my wife's actually done this, and my sister-in-law's done it, I tell them, first thing, read Introduction to God. And if you really want to get involved in it, go get, I give them a handful of lexicons and an interlinear to start with. Mm-hmm. I'm like, start with Introduction to God. Check every translation you come across that seems, like it's out there. If it's something that, you're like, wait, that doesn't sound right. Let me check. Check every one of them. Just like that. That's how you're going to learn the language. That's how you're going to learn the translation process. And if you make it through all of Introduction to God doing that, I think you're set and you're ready to start. You could jump in translating probably better than I am.
Because that's the primer, really, for
translating. It is, it gives you all the tools. It gets into all the stems, the tenses, everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn that part of it. And
your start ought to be based upon where you are. If you're, for example, if you're still a Christian because you were raised in this Christian culture, but you're beginning to question some of the really dumb things about Christianity, some of the things that are obviously impossible to be true, like the idea of love God or he will see to it that you're tortured in hell forever. Come on, a rational person knows that kind of God isn't lovable. I mean, come on, that's stupid. Christmas and Easter, it doesn't take much to realize those are Babylonian holidays. They're pagan religious holidays. There was no switch from the Shabbat, the Sabbath, to Sunday. There's no Trinity. There can't be a person named Jesus. Impossible. And it's so easily discernible that if you are a Christian, or consider yourself a nominal Christian, but open-minded and willing to question, then you may want to start with questioning Paul. It has a marvelous idea of introducing you to Yahweh and comparing Yahweh's testimony to Paul's testimony, and the comparison is marvelous in favor of Yahweh. And it'll demonstrate every reason that religion and Christianity are wrong. Let's say that you're an agnostic, and you're more like JB, like you, and you're motivated to learn, but your preference is for evidence and reason. Well, man, there isn't much more compelling than reading Yada Yada. I mean, it starts with a creation account laid out before your eyes that is precisely accurate. And the flood.
You can't make it through the first 2 chapters of Yada Yada and remain an agnostic.
You can't. No, it's impossible. Absolutely impossible. Just like you can't make it through the first 2 chapters of Questioning Paul and remain a Christian. Impossible.
Yeah.
If you're intellectually honest, it's impossible. It's like it's impossible to read Prophet of Doom and remain a Muslim. Can't be done. So, that would be the person who is an agnostic and is driven by evidence and reason. I'd have to start with Yada Yada. If you're just trying to introduce someone to the radical difference between who God is and what he's offering and what man is all about, religious and political man is all about, and what they're really seeking and why one is superior to the other. Boy, it's pretty hard to do to beat an introduction to God. And it just grabs you right by the throat, right at the get-go, and shakes you in the shoulders and says, wait a minute, everything you've been told is wrong. And here's the truth. And it's so much better. And so if instead your mindset is, I don't trust anybody. I hate this religion stuff anyway. I don't trust anybody. I'm from Missouri, the show me state, and you've got to prove it. Then prove it to yourself, and as you say, an introduction to God gives you the toolbox. And then,
I don't care which one you start with, check the translations as you go.
Right.
So verify it for yourself every step of the way.
Right. An introduction to God actually provides you not only with the tools in the toolbox, it teaches you how to use the toolbox by applying those tools to the topics that are the most interesting to you, the ones that are the most important for us to know. So it's active learning.
Well, it brings your mindset to know Yahweh, because you said before, that's one of the most important parts if you want to translate it. You have to know Yahweh. If you don't know Yahweh, it don't matter how well you know Hebrew, you're not going to be able to do it, because you have to know Him to know. A lot of Hebrew is open to, I don't want to say interpretation, but they have multiple meanings. And so if you don't know the person speaking, you really can't determine whether it means this or this.
Right.
So when Yahweh uses the word, and it, like Yare, it can mean fear or it can mean respect. If you don't know Yahweh, you might be translated out as fear when it shouldn't be.
Right. Yeah, I remember the motivation for writing Introduction to God was my son was dating a nominal Roman Catholic. And he said, help me share with her what we've come to know in a manner that just walks her through the process. And so that was the whole mindset. And then I realized, there's a whole world of people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can tell them, here's the history of the manuscripts and which ones you can rely upon and how effective they are. Here's the original alphabet that was used to create these letters and these words. And here is the essence of Hebrew grammar in terms of the relational stems and the volitional moods as well as the conjugations. And you put all that together with a reference to here are some interesting lexicons and interlinears. These are the tools. Go use them. It's like having the world's best garden implements and letting them sit on the shelf. Go use them. Go plant some seeds. Go water some seeds. Go pull some weeds. Reap the harvest. So, Kirk, as you were continuing to deal with you recognize that this chol and safa had nothing to do with actually sand or with gates.
No. So everything you said as far as instead of gates, you're talking about calculating, reckoning, figuring things out, how they think. And then, of course, you wrote, let me go up here just a minute. You wrote, in addition, you also shall inherit the impoverished and impoverish the thinking of his enemies. That's not take over his land. So when I read that, and I said, I know what you're talking about, but let me go look up some things and prove that that's very accurate. And because obviously, if you went to King James, it doesn't say that at all. Your seed shall possess the gates of their enemies. So when you do it, I mean, that is exactly what those things mean. We're not talking about just a gate. We're talking about their thinking. And then in the context of what Yahweh hates the most, which is religions of man.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the impoverishment of the human beings on this planet, or because of They're thinking. They're thinking of Yah's enemies, of Yahuda's enemies, those who are Babylonian, those who are religious Christians, or whether they're Muslims or whatever. That's what he's referring to here. And unfortunately, if you don't dig a little bit, you won't get there. Not if you leave it to what they say, because the average Masoretic text is translated into English King James or New American Standard Bibles or any of those 26 that I have in that book over there. They are so adamant, obviously for sales reasons, of course, but they just will not go beyond one or two of the first meanings of the word. And a lot of times what I have found now, I can absolutely safely say that it's not even the first choice, it's their first choice. It's not the one you find in most of the better lexicons.
Right. Because possess isn't a first, second, third, or fourth choice of Yarish. The first choice of Yarish is inherit. The second choice is impoverish.
Mm-hmm. The third choice comes out very often.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, you think of words like you brought up, Yare, to fear or respect. That is the two ways that people will encounter God. Those who encounter him, now most people will not. Most people don't know him. They don't. He doesn't know them. They transfer from life to non-existence in a manner that they simply cease to exist. So they're not going to revere or fear, yeah. But the two extremes, those who accept his covenant, who will come to revere him, Yare, and those who lead people away from his covenant, this coarse sand of the twisted verbiage of the Gentiles, that they will come to fear him. They've taught people to fear him, and they will come to fear him because they'll be judged by him. And there's nothing they can do about it. Well, Yarish is one of those words. Exactly the same thing. You're either going to inherit all that Yahweh has to offer by accepting the covenant, or you're going to be impoverished because you've impoverished those who believed you. That's as simple as it could possibly be.
Yeah.
And that's why words like this have a mark at my side. Yeah. Perfect. It's like ana. Ana means to answer and respond. But ana also means to afflict. You know, if you decided through religion and politics that you're going to afflict your fellow man, you will be ana afflicted. You'll be humbled. You'll be debased. But if you've answered and responded to Yahweh through his covenant and his invitations to meet, his bikrei, then you're going to find him kneeling down in love to lift you up, making you like the light of the stars. This is Yarish. Yarish.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my final comment on that last thing was I could not see how anyone could think that Yahweh would bless someone and empower people to steal and destroy their enemies' lands. I mean, it just didn't happen.
It makes no sense.
Right. Just the certainness, you know, as J.B. always says, I mean, consider the context. Is that what Yahweh is telling them to do? Or, so we have
to be like it never happened.
Yeah, it's
right.
Not going to happen.
It never happened.
No.
Since it never happened, and it's so contrary to a father, and there are some really despicable fathers out there that I'm sure have told their sons that you know, you're going to go and be a great conqueror. But you know, most, even if you look at Alexander the Great, who was a great conqueror, therefore a despicable person, mm-hmm. His daddy didn't want him to conquer. Why? Because if Alexander conquered, guess who the first person he was going to defeat was?
Him.
Daddy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he did.
He did.
And he did.
Started with Macedonia.
Yeah. So, you know, Philip, yeah, he did. So you got to think it through and to say, you know, the last thing that any sane father would want is for his son to be a conqueror. It's counterproductive, and it's the antithesis of what Yahweh wants. You know, Yahweh drove the vermin out of the Promised Land. He had no interest in, in fact, the places where he had no interest of the children of Israel benefiting from what they had there. It's just polluted. God is absolutely out.
He didn't want to rule over them. He didn't want the Israelites to rule over them. He wanted them out, gone.
That's correct. Gone. Right. You can't enrich someone with that which is corrupt. You know, I could give you a mountain of counterfeit bills. I've not enriched you. I've impoverished you.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
I could give you a billion Christian babbles. I'm not enriched you. I've impoverished you.
You know, I have such a large library. And we were thinking, well, gosh, these things are worth a lot of money. I ought to sell them. And I'm saying, I really don't want to put them out there for anybody to read them.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I can't even, we destroyed our Christmas. I mean, Terry just freaked me out when she, because, you know, she liked, when she read Yada Yada, I mean, she's out there breaking up all the Christmas decorations, and rather than sell them, she's just out there with a big trash can, whack, 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 and I'm going, wow, baby, you've come a long way.
Should we sell these in a garage?
Yeah.
Wow. No.
You
know,
can we sell them out?
Somebody else have this?
Yeah. So, no, you don't want to pass that on so somebody would continue on the wrong path. Gosh, give me a break. Mm-hmm. So, in any case, yes.
Yeah. But Andrew, by the way, just sent us a link to what a grain of sand looks like magnified. I don't know if you're people in the forum, and you click on that link that he sent, it'll take you to grains of sand magnified. It's kind of like the word of Yahweh magnified. They're gorgeous. They're gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful.
And
even in... Yeah, Kendro is in the forum, and he said, yeah, hey, Craig, have you ever seen a grain of sand magnified? And then he wrote another entry, and he said, it looks like this. And so I clicked on it. And if you click on something, it will open up a new window, and it takes you right there. It's beautiful.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's not as awesome as Yahweh's words magnified, but it's still pretty awesome. Never thought of that before. It's a great insight.
Something that you look at, you sit there and look at on the ground, it's there.
Yeah, you know,
there's
one of the things
that I've said,
I don't think I've mentioned this in a very, very long time, but I have. It's something that I shared once a long time ago. You know, the misnomer of the Christian view was that, you know, man had to be at the center of the universe, and therefore the sun and everything had to revolve around man. And that was because, of course, man-made religion. Man is God's created in man's image. And so everything revolves around man in religion and most certainly in Christianity. And what I said is, that's partly right, but not from the perspective that they were considering it. If you look at the detail, the scale of the universe, man is actually right in the middle of that scale. The universe is retreating inward in terms of being smaller. At the same rate, it's expanding and it is massive outwardly. You know, this detail of material things being an agglomeration of molecules, and the molecules being comprised of atoms, and the atoms being comprised of neutrons and protons and electrons, and the protons and the neutrons being comprised of quarks and leptons and the like. and that you find that each of them have various shades and colors and frequencies. And then we learn that there are things like the boson particle that are even smaller than that. And we find that our ability to ascertain the rate that the universe is diminishing, the scale, the downward scale, is equal to our ability to appreciate the outward magnitude of it. And so,
I was actually thinking that earlier when we were reading this verse earlier, and we were talking about being expanded, magnified like the stars. I was thinking this kind of started mulling this over. I hadn't really thought of it in that way before, but I think in eternity we will be able to go inward just as much as we can outward.
Yeah,
we'll be able to explore into those subatomic levels.
That was half the point. Yeah, that was half the point. Because the point I was making is that, we read out in the middle of the universe, but you took it to the next level, which is the part that is joyous for me. Because what good is a universe that is 30 billion light years across if you can't examine it? You can't go there. What good is a universe that's whose scale and whose detail is as minute as the universe is massive if you can't experience it? Well, guess what?
We will.
What God was going to do with us, we'll be able to experience the inward magnification of all of this just as we experience the telescoping of that which is so massive. Explore both ways. And wouldn't it be, we've all looked at pictures that are of electron magnet electron microscopes as they amplify that which is of nature and the beauty of life in particular, but of so many things that are extraordinarily beautiful. And I think there's going to be as much pleasure in that. If you could, for example, actually read DNA. If you were capable of reading a three-dimensional alphabet, and then having this presence of seeing how all of these chords and strokes and images and letters were compiled to create the great variety of life, wouldn't that be a thrill?
That would be really enlightened, so I could figure that out.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't it be fun to say, all right, Kirk, JB, and Craig, you guys, I've created a solar system out there. It's got a planet on it. Really conducive to life. You've got the DNA that I use to create life. And now you can read it. It's written in Hebrew. You can read it. Go off now and play with it. See what you come up with. See if you can beat the platypus. Yeah. See if you can out-cute a little fawn. See if you can out-cute a little fawn. If you think you can do better than the otter, have at it. And by the way, this is not a competition. If you can do better, even if you can't do better,
we're all afloat.
But you can do.
No, I'm still of the opinion the pinnacle of God's creation is dogs.
Yeah, dog.
Woman,
yeah.
Dog, man, yeah. Way down there.
Yeah. Well, the pinnacle is obviously woman, but yeah, dog is got to be second in the man. I've had such wonderful, wonderful, wonderful dogs. Yep. So it is. It's just a joy. It doesn't matter if you're reading Yahweh's words and you're amplifying them or expanding upon them. It doesn't matter if you're looking at His creation, whether it's organic or inorganic. It's all magnificent. Whether it's inward or outward and scale, and then thinking of not just having the capacity to visualize and experience it all. Think of, for a moment, how radically different the universe would appear if you were in flatland you were Mickey and Minnie Mouse, and you only knew of two dimensions. You'd heard that there's three and maybe even four, but all you'd ever known is flatland. You would have no capacity to rise up above flatland or even to perceive what 3D was even like. Now imagine us. We're a three-and-a-half-dimensional construct in what is clearly a six-dimensional universe. And just think the expansive capability and appreciation of all that the universe has to offer, inwardly and outwardly, as we are elevated in our capacity to appreciate, understand, and experience from three dimensions to four, five, and six, and ultimately to seven. And at seven, you can actually look upon the universe from outside. And at six, you can experience all of it. That's what we are, Yarash, inheriting. That's why the Christian babbles and their religious babble is so impoverishing.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never hear a pastor speak of this. Those pastors that want to speak about being enriched are all about dig deep and give. Don't want to hear that rattle in that collection page. Fold that money and hand it over and God will enrich you.
Well, Barack is the way they sell it. As you are, if God blesses you, then it should reflect in your pocketbook. It should reflect in your house and your car as if that was the biggest deal in the world. You know, otherwise he must not bless you because you're still struggling for whatever, or doing this or doing that.
Yeah.
Those are based on other choices, not because of y'all. And you can be impoverished almost, or poor, not impoverished, but poor, and still be greatly enriched just by reading his word. And being
I'm convinced, for example,
there are rich drug lords. Does that mean God loves them?
No. And, matter of fact, I was just going to say that, I made a fair amount of money over my business career, but I can tell you that God had nothing to do with it. And the reason I can tell you it had nothing to do with it is because the anguish that I suffered, the attacks that I endured along the way would never have occurred if God was hand were in it. Now, I think that having been successful in business, even at a great price, was beneficial because having been successful, I was able to devote the time and have the resources, and having been so abused in that process, gave me the backbone and the character to say, I'm going where the words lead. I'm going to go with God. I don't care if someone hates it. I don't care if I'm demeaned for doing it. I don't care Wall Street Journal won't promote the home because I told the truth about Muhammad, using his own words. I don't care. Bring it on. And, sometimes you've got to take the blows before you have the backbone and character to go where Yah's words lead. Because they don't lead to a very popular place. Almost any time someone says, I'm really interested in your books, they say, well, before you say that, you better well make sure that you're open-minded. You better well make sure that you're not overtly religious and political. You better make sure that you're willing to go where the words lead. You better be aware the truth is extraordinarily unpopular. And if you're not willing to embrace that, then just going to make you mad.
Save your time.
Yeah. Don't waste your time. Don't be aggravated.
Don't waste ours.
Yeah, don't waste ours.
Yeah.
So now, if you want to read it, if you're interested in this, I'll invest whatever time you need, and I'll walk with you along the way. I apologize for many people who have written me recently, and I haven't responded. I've got plenty of more distractions and issues that I'm trying to reconcile and deal with probably than any time in the last 15 years. And so I've been bad at it, and I apologize for that. Please don't hold it against me. Because one of the things that I noticed when I asked folks for that letter of recommendation is almost universally, they said the same thing, which is that, you know, I may have heard him on a radio show, or I stumbled upon the books, or somebody directed me in this path. And early on, I sent him a note. And, you know, he didn't know me from Adam, and he answered the note and really was committed to trying to help me understand. No benefit to himself, devoting his time just to helping me process this so that I might understand. And, you know, that's kind of the key to all of this. It's the attitude that works, and it's the proper approach. If somebody's interested, then hand them this branch. Reach out.
Do everything you can to help them.
Yes, answer their questions. Yeah, if they just want to take a fight, leave them alone. That's why I tell people all the time that when somebody writes something that's critical, you know, for example, the one person that attempted to write a rebuttal of just the introduction to Questioning Paul, and they said, you know, the scholarship is horrible that he says that Paul wrote half the Christian New Testament. I didn't say Paul wrote half the Christian New Testament. What I said is that Paul is responsible for half the Christian New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wrote 13 letters. Yeah, he wrote 13 letters. He is the story of Acts. And the book of Luke was written by his attaché. And it's tailored to Paul's message. And so if you add Luke and Acts and Paul's 13 letters, and let's not forget Hebrews, because Hebrews is one of Paul's apprentices. That's half the Christian New Testament.
Sure is.
just the bottom line. So all you have to do is think it through. Now, do you think that I bothered to write a rebuttal to this Christian that says, you know, his scholarship is weak because, well, if you total up the number of pages of Paul and you compare that to the number of pages of the rest of the Christian New Testament, it's less than half. I think it's
true. Most of those have been rewritten by Christians.
Right.
Translators
think it
too.
Through. Right.
Yeah.
Think it through. You know, it's one of the things I have no respect for. It's one of my pet peeves.
Mm-hmm.
Is someone who makes an argument by taking things out of context and twisting them to serve their interest. Because you can't respond to a person like that. You can't debate a person like that.
That's one area where I've learned a lot over the years. There was a time when I'd have got an email like that, and I'd have sat down and spent 3 hours writing up a reply, detailing point by point why they're wrong. And it's, now I get something like that, I just delete. I know there's no point with someone like that.
Yeah, I don't respond.
Not
worth the time to respond. And all you do is you get into a mudslinging contest with an idiot. You know, if my time can be spent translating something else Yahweh said and learning more and then sharing what I have learned, or trying to prove that an idiot is wrong. One is rewarding, it's uplifting, it has value, and the other is a total and complete waste of time. You know, what did Yosha do when he was confronted with a mob of normal people, which are religious and bloody? What did he do?
He left.
Walked away.
He left.
Right. He just left.
Well, yeah.
I don't want to encounter these people. Well, he just left. Right. So there's a lesson there. Yeah. You know, in the house that I have in Ohio, there's right next to it, there's I guess it's made out of cement, but it's like a 150-foot statue of Jesus, arms out, you know, welcoming the world. He didn't welcome the world. He didn't have his arms out.
No.
Come on, folks.
I'd divide them up.
Oh, goodness.
He picked a very select group of people, and he taught them.
Yeah.
He gave a handful of public addresses, but even those were few and far between.
Correct. Very few. And most of the time, he was perturbed with people. He says, all right, why did you touch me? Why are you here? All right, I'm going to do this, but not for you. But that others might see something far more profound in it. So the what's called the Sermon on the Mount, it's not happy talk. It's not welcome to the family. Well, man, don't be misled. This is not what I'm about. The religion that's going to be built and based upon my corruption of my name is a total and complete farce. That's what he said. He wasn't embracing people and embracing religion or politics. He was condemning them. And all the way through the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, it isn't God being religious or political. It's him dismissing religion and politics. That's exactly who Yosha was. In fact, one of the interesting things is that one of my favorite lines is he's towards the end, he's out on the lake with his disciples, and he actually explains the obvious conclusion as to what yeast represents. And he says yeast is the consequence of politics. It's just so marvelous, and yet I just don't think that there's 1 in a million people that get it.
Yeah.
And the reason they don't understand who God is, the translations they're reading are impoverished. They're yarks.
Yeah.
And the reason that there's so many people now that are part of the covenant is the Word of God is enriching. It's the ultimate inheritance.
Yeah. You want to do 22:18 real quick? Or do we
please. No, please. Go ahead.
I might have to step away. I got a baby girl wanting me to go read her story. So.
Okay, you do it, man.
I don't know if you guys will be on the line when I get back, but I'm going to do that. And in case I do miss you, I'm not going to be able to make it the next 2 weeks. I'm going to be out of town on vacation. So just so
okay,
you know.
Well, enjoy. Best of you and Patty and your little one.
All right, go ahead. You guys have a good weekend.
Good night, Jesse.
Yeah, 22:18.
What did
you find?
Yeah, I'm gonna read what she wrote again, just because it's such a contrast to it, not only an expanse versus how small it is, and then we'll get to some of the words you translated. Yahweh wrote, as long as they act independently and are not swayed by societal influences, people of every ethnicity on the earth will be blessed by way of your descendants. The reward is a consequence and is merited because to show the way to the benefits of an upright and elevated state with a joyful attitude and to encourage walking the correct way along the proper and specific path to life in response to this guidance about pursuing the relationship the right way, you actually listen to my voice. That is very accurate when you start putting the words, when you start analyzing the words. But here's what they wrote. By contrast, they wrote, in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. Full stop. Yeah.
Now,
that alone,
well, that
does
completely negates,
mm-hmm.
completely ignores the hetpael stem. Hetpael stem is really rare. When it's used, you better pay attention.
Yeah.
And the hetpael stem is what caused me to say, and so long as they act independently and are not swayed by societal influences, people of every ethnicity on the earth shall be blessed. Wa barak kol goyim ha eretz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Therefore, individuals of every nation on earth who act upon their own initiative, unaffected by the indoctrination of religion, politics, patriotism, without regard for peer pressure or any external influence, will be lifted up. The hetpael stem and the perfect conjugation make it clear that the subject is not being acted upon or prejudiced by any prevailing societal influence, and that at least for a period of time, these individuals act without reservation on their own recognizance, thereby are being lifted up based upon their own decisions regarding the blessing which results in them being favored. Why would you ignore all of that?
I don't know.
Well, of course, I mean, because religion, they want people to do exactly the opposite, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I know, and that I'm always stunned by it. I'm always stunned
right.
by it.
Right, it's rich. It shouts, you're doing this independently. It shouts, you're doing this without not being affected by any outside influences. You're doing this of your own volition.
Mm-hmm.
Such a powerful
everywhere
Yahweh.
Anyone came to Yahweh. And you go through the Passover door by yourself.
Right.
You know, you
correct.
You make this decision and you walk away from it. That's the first term and condition, is to walk away.
Correct.
So you have to walk away from it. You cannot be influenced by those things. So, I mean, it's a great translation. It's far more precise and to the point. It covers every base. But if you were trying to look at the King James, Craig, and you're saying, okay, well, let's look up the words, and if you just did a quick, I don't know, maybe a Strong's or one of the ones on the internet, you say, and you look up Barak, it just simply says bless, and then you start getting into this connotation of what you think blessing is, as opposed to Yahweh reaching down to lift us up, you're, oh, he's blessing us, or I'm blessing God, or whatever. You look at Zerah, the next word, and it's the first thing you're going to find in the lexicon, most of the lexicons that the vast number of people look, if they choose to look, it'll say seed. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, but we're talking about descendants, and we're talking about his children, so...
Abraham doesn't have any seed.
No.
So, unless you're speaking of sperm and seed.
Sperm is not...
interesting. The nun in Hebrew is a sperm,
yeah.
And therefore a seed. But the seed in Hebrew speaks of reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the seed causes the plant to grow. Sperm causes children to be conceived, and so that's what sperm is. That's what the seed is. And think about the descendants of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Was Moshe a descendant of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob?
Mm-hmm.
How about Samuel?
Yes.
How about Dod? How about mm-hmm. Dod?
Yes, absolutely.
How about Yahshua?
Yes, sir.
Jeremiah?
Mm-hmm.
How about Yosef?
Yes.
How about even Mataniah and Yahu Kanan?
Absolutely.
How about Shimon Kefesh?
Indeed. Once again.
Every single one of them, right? Every single one of them was from the seed, the offspring of Abraham, through his descendants, and through Yisrael. Every one of them. How the world is blessed, because it is those individuals that brought us the very word of God. The very word that Abraham acted upon that caused him to inherit the covenant. That's what he's talking about here.
Mm-hmm. But you won't get it out of these lexicons if you just go one deep.
No. This reward is a consequence and is merited because, oh my, they won't give you that one either, will they?
Mm-mm. No, any quib. Well, it's a consequence of actions, and they won't say that either.
No. Yeah, because they want a faith-based religion, which means
they want you to believe
them.
You can't actually act on something and be rewarded right. for taking a stand. No.
Yeah. It can't become. Yeah, it speaks of to the very end of time, this beneficial result of trusting the evidence, which is made conspicuously visible along the path, whereby one slants their heels, that's speaking, of course, of Jacob and therefore of Israel, to walk in the upright and unwavering manner, as would Jacob, is being given for the express reason, Asher, to show the way, to provide the benefits of an elevated state and a marvelous and empowering relationship. Because you have actually listened to my voice. Oh, and to change that, to obey, you scum.
Well, because...
despicable maggots.
Yeah. Let me give you some definitions of Shema and Qual where they went to obey my voice. And here's some good stuff on Shema. Instead of just saying to hear, obviously it's a verb, but it also means to call together, which is a mikre, to call together with interest and understanding, to listen carefully to that which is revealed.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It can be from the more ancient meaning was to hear the voice of the shepherd. And the example was the sheep hear the voice of the shepherd and they gather to him. So it's more than just simply hearing. In the context is you're hearing in order to carefully listening, rather, I should say, in order to understand or discern something very important. When you get to the qual, which is voice, it is more than just a call. It is the call of the shepherd, which can be both a metaphor or it could be something very, it can be real in the sense that it is the call of the shepherd I just mentioned a minute ago. This call of the shepherd that calls out to the sheep and they gather for him, just as, because he's always using the metaphor of the sheep and the shepherd. And then it just can be simply mean to respond to his voice, his being Yahweh's voice. How do you get obey? I don't know. There's no word for obey.
And Shema is clearly, unequivocally, listen and hear.
Yeah,
you can go beyond listen and hear.
Mm-hmm.
But any time you do, you're extrapolating. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Extrapolation is okay. But there is no extrapolation of listen and hear that becomes obey.
No.
No. You can have listen intently.
Yeah.
Hear so that you understand. Focus on what I'm saying so that that it sinks into your wee little brain.
Mm-hmm.
But Shema means to listen. Shamar means to observe. That's what these words mean. And it is, I just say, it's despicable. It's disgusting. It's horribly impoverishing when the retrobates of Christianity change a word that is so essential to understand like Shema from listen to my voice to obey.
Yeah. Well, this is the first one, I've probably said this before, it's the first one I ever looked up when I kept reading your yada yada.
Okay.
Because... both Shema and Shamar, you get into obeying the Lord, and I say, well, if that can't be found, then, or if it is, I got to prove it one way or the other. And yeah, you can find lexicons where it says obey, but you can't. That's not what it means. So you look up the word obey, and no, because it's always obeying that from an authority of a Lord or something to that, something along those lines. And that's not what it says. That's not what it is. They have to put it in there, or they can't run their ship the way they run it.
Correct. Because it's just like the Christian God is a God created in the image of despicable man.
And has to be
wants
feared.
To be worshipped, wants to be obeyed, wants to be feared. That's the Christian God. The Christian God is controlling. He needs to be praised. He's insecure. He's just like the Christian man.
You have to bend.
And so, And so the Christian leaders, the authority in Christianity, want to be obeyed, so they protect this other god, and then they say they're the authorized and empowered by God, so therefore you better damn well obey me. And if you don't, I'll kill you. I'll torture you. I'll crucify you. I'll ostracize you. I'll demean you. Slander you. And just think of how just disgusting God would have to be to say, I created you to obey me. God, he created a being to obey him. Why did he ever stop? Why didn't he just stop with the Moloch?
Yeah.
The spiritual implements.
Yeah,
they obey him.
So. Yeah.
Right. They obey him because they're implements. They're tools. It's like working with a shovel. It'll do what you want done.
Which
if you push it in the ground over there, it's going to go in the ground over there. If you lift it up and dump it, the remains someplace, it's going to do exactly as you direct it to do. The Moloch do that. If Yahweh simply wanted to be obeyed, there was no reason to create man. Here he had the Moloch. There is no reason, if Yahweh wanted to be obeyed, that he would have cared more about Adam than he did the heavenly host. There would have been no reason for HaSatan to rebel, to be jealous, if it weren't for the fact that man was special, because man was given free will and had the choice to accept or reject God. HaSatan didn't have that choice. And that's why the consequence of his rebellion, of his ego, of his attitude, was to be forever incarcerated in Sheol, the black hole, along with all the religious leaders that he has inspired along the way.
If you don't have obey, if you wipe that out, which you have, and it is obviously not there, then you can't have a Lord.
Correct. And you can't have a law.
No.
You can't have a law. So the Torah can't be law. But if you have obey, you've got law and you've got Lord,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a God to be feared. But when Shammah is correctly rendered and it's listen, then you can have a father. You can have guidance.
You have a teacher.
And you have a teacher who wants to be respected.
These are the simplest things you can look up.
Yeah, they are, really.
But
it's not just the word that is the easiest. But, I mean, there probably is no word that is more clear-cut than Shammah does not mean obey, and it means to listen. But there's probably no word beyond the fact that it's that clear-cut, black and white. There's probably no word that sets the tone for what Yahweh is all about and what man's corruptions are all about than Shammah.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything that is more important to religion than changing listen to obey, and therefore father to Lord, and therefore respect to fear.
When the New Testament says, what is it, Revelations? And they go to him and they say, Lord, Lord. Does nobody get that?
Yeah. No one calling me Lord, Lord is going to be allowed.
I heard it started. I don't know, one of the problems I thought he was talking about.
Yeah.
Don't call me Lord. And it's,
That's all of you. None of you are calling me Lord. You're not going to be allowed into heaven. I don't know you. You don't know me. And they said, Lord, Lord.
Yeah,
didn't we do wonderful things in your name? Didn't we, cast out demons in your name? Didn't all go away?
Yeah, he was so impressed.
I don't know you, you Torahless ones.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. when you actually understand the Torah and you actually know who Yahweh is, it just all falls into place and becomes, you know, just so utterly magnificent. You know, for example, we're next program, we're going to go back into Yashayah in 53. And 53:1 reads like this, says this: whoever trusts and relies approaches in accordance with our message, and is to whom the sacrificial lamb of Yahweh has been revealed and made known. Well, if you confirm the enduring validity and verify the trustworthy nature of this testimony, and you approach in accordance with it, and the message and the information that has been reported by Yahweh through the descendants of Abraham, then you are going to understand the sacrificial lamb, the Zerorah of Yahweh. And that the sacrificial lamb of Yahweh is the Pesach lamb. And that you're going to have reinforced why this example all took place with Abraham and Yitzhak celebrating Pesach.
It's magnificent tie-in. I mean, I was reading that today.
Yeah, just when I thought about it, just everything we just heard about the lamb being caught, you know, in the, by his horns, and the gleaming rays of brilliant light on Moriah as a celebration of Pesach. And then you realize how Yashayah 53 begins. All of a sudden you say, that's the celebration. This is the explanation.
Now, did you
want your amplification? Here it is. You want your proof text? Here it is.
Did you go to 53 in the translation and then go back to the Abraham story?
You know, from the Abraham story, and this whole experience of the test being this open book test, confirming that Abraham understood the connection between the covenant and Pesach Passover, and that he acted upon the word of Yahweh. It just screamed out to me that there we need to reinforce why it was the Lamb of Yahweh that became the sacrifice on Pesach. And that's the whole story of Yashayah 53.
Mm-hmm.
The whole story of Yahweh 53 is the Lamb of God. So it explains the role that the Lamb played in the story of the affirmation of the covenant with Abraham and Yitzhak on Mount Moriah that would transpire exactly 2,000 years or 50 yobels later. You know what's really interesting?
Yes.
Do you know how many years after this story was played out, the covenant story was played out, to the time that Yashayah revealed Yahweh's testimony in Yashayah 53?
Was that the 777 year?
You got it, 777 years.
I recall that, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't miss a trick, does he?
Oh, he got it all.
666 years from
Shaul. It strikes me that he identifies Shaul as when the 666, 666 years before Shaul would write his first book. And Shavuot was revealed exactly 666 years in advance of that. And then here you have the explanation of all of this revealed 777 years after Abraham and Yitzhak left it out. Cool?
Yeah.
I mean, is that the primary lesson to learn here? No, but you get it. You know, Yahweh's got a sense of humor here, man. I mean, that really is a sense of humor.
It goes in, I think, just for your entertainment.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Look at this.
Oh, when I came up with it, it figured out the 666 years to Shaul. Oh, man. That's right.
Hey, you're good, Paul.
That's a good one. That's a really good one right there. Yeah. Or how using relativity, you can figure out using the cosmic microwave background radiation from the Big Bang. That it's exactly 6 24-hour days. from the perspective
that's a
of the creator.
I was like,
yeah.
Wow. That's a wowie.
Yeah, I go, okay, so that's impressive. Yeah, it's just so many things like this. Wow, that's impressive. Or that Yitzhak and Abraham on Mount Moriah explaining the purpose of a Pesach Passover, and there would be exactly 50 Yobel, 2,000 years later, that Pesach would be played out for real, with the real sacrificial lamb of Yahweh on this very same spot. Yeah.
You know, in the prophecies of Daniel, you can program, I mean, you can figure out exactly when that day is that he's going to come through, and now knowing what we know now is very easy looking back in retrospect. But I had done that prior to meeting you. And
that's how you come to 33 CE, by the way. And that is,
yeah.
That's how you know it was 33 CE is by doing the math that was provided through Daniel.
Daniel, huh?
Right.
Well, always,
and
always
then when you come to 33 CE, then all of a sudden they say, oh my goodness, the cornerstone of, then no one disputes it, the cornerstone of Yahweh's home, laid in 968 BCE, exactly 1,000 years.
Oh,
and
you
go back to Abraham and Yitzhak, and it's exactly 2,000 years. And then you go back to Adam and Chawa being exposed to the garden, and it's 40 Yobel or 4,000 years. And then you look at the 2 days that we're talking about that will transpire before he returns and reconciles his relationship with the family, and that's 2,000 years or another period of 50 Yobel. Oh my goodness, that takes you right to 2033. And it's within the generation of those who saw the restoration of Israel.
Yeah. And we know what a generation is, so it cannot be another Yobel later. So it has to be this one.
That is correct.
Yeah. Well, Yahweh told everybody everything. It's not a question. I think you said one time it may be from one of the prophets or Dod, but I think you said one time, you know, anything you're looking for in there, he'll answer. And I think Yahweh said that, but
yeah,
it's absolutely true. I mean, it's if you dig a little bit, it's there. I used to want to
hurry up
dig towards, but we've kind of gone over that hurdle enough. You know, that's the truth. That's the both the joy of getting there, as well as it kind of keeps people from just casually walking through the door.
I had my friend Jerry McLaughlin wrote me a note the other day, and he had come upon something that I had written in Observations for a Time, and said that, you know, God does not make it easy to know it. That's the filtering mechanism. He recognizes that people that would just do something genuflect, if you will. To enter heaven, but are not committed to learning, are not really committed to finding the truth and acting upon it, those are the kind of people that would make heaven miserable. And so he has to make it such that the only people that will be allowed in are those who are genuinely interested in listening to what he has to say and observing what he wrote and then thinking about it and acting upon it, and that if it was easy, then heaven wouldn't be any different.
Well, we're already there.
We're already there. Yeah. And how that's the antithesis of what religion would convey, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You not only have to invest the time and think it through, that's the entire point.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of stuff that I'll probably never have a lifetime enough to get to, but we'll get a tour in our hearts one day, and we'll have everything we need to know. But there's still plenty to explore. And I used to worry that, you know, you'd get some questions from time to time. Well, why didn't somebody just come up with the whole thing? And so much of it is not as germane as, I mean, I could spend a lifetime in this, these last two chapters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's and just go, wow. And I mean,
we could.
I'm revisiting Question and Paul, but I'm revisiting it specifically with Chabuk and starting to translate because I never really had translated that before, and I'm going, wow, this stuff is really good.
Yeah, I find that I have an out-of-body experience almost when I read something I wrote a long time ago. I was reading the opening chapter of Observations for Our Time not long ago. Before that, I read the opening chapter of Questioning Paul. And
yeah.
You just read it and say, wow, this is so profound, so relevant, so
mm-hmm.
so incredibly empowering and enlightening. Who wrote this? You know, you say, oh, yeah, we wrote this. This is an analysis of what the creator God of the universe had to say. That's why it is so profound.
Yeah.
And so even the words that were written to expound upon it, to share what was being conveyed, to amplify each of these words, there is, as inspiring as the very words themselves, because they are the extension of and the purpose of his testimony. And you just read it and say, wow.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I can take a bath in it. It's just so enlightening. It's so uplifting. It gives you goosebumps. As I said, about 2 weeks ago, I just sat down and said, yeah, I want to read Observations for a Time. And I said, oh, man. It's marvelous stuff.
Yeah, thank you for letting me hang around with y'all.
It's nothing to do with me. It's just marvelous stuff. As I tell people that are concerned that what I have written and what I share is judgmental and therefore negativity and critical and controversial and no part of that. I always tell them that, no.
Oh, really?
What we're going to do here is we're going to disprove and invalidate the lie.
No.
We're not going to leave you with that. We're not going to just deprive you of the lie. And by the way, being awakened from false hope is an incredibly important thing to do. Valuable thing to do. But we're going to replace that with testimony and truth that is amazingly empowering and enlightening and uplifting and liberating. The truth is infinitely superior to the lie. And so it's actually the most positive thing you could possibly have as opposed to negative.
I never found anything that was disprovable in so many different ways. I mean, I used to think I was a pretty good debater. I can't, you can't debate y'all.
No, I learned that really, 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 really early on. Even if you disagree with something, and there's a lot of places where I disagree. I don't disagree anymore, but I did disagree. I disagree. In fact, I'm sure there's other places where I still disagree. But I just learned, I want to tell you, it's in your interest, dummy, to accept what he has to say. You may not understand the reasons for it now, but you will. It's just like, initially, this is so profound when you put it together. Why didn't you just lay it out for people this way? Why didn't you explain what each of the Moed Mikrae represent? Why didn't you take the time to explain how the first four Moed Mikrae were fulfilled because they provide the benefits of the covenant? Why didn't you just say, you have that there are five hands in my name, Yahweh. You have five fingers on your hand, and there are five terms and conditions of the covenant. Why do you just lay it out like that? And five benefits. And so, that was one of my arguments. But I tell you what, though. At least I was smart enough to debate honestly. How come you didn't listen to me? I wouldn't have done that. No, I just said, I don't get it. I don't understand why you did it that way, why you didn't just make it easier. And then one day, it just hit me like a right between the eyes, like a fast ball of light. And oh, that's the entire point. Can't be easy. It has to be a challenge. Nobody appreciates something that was given to them. They appreciate something that they earned.
Well, you know the story that you used to tell all the time about when we were talking in those other programs about governmental gifts, money, food stamps, no such. Now, there's just the worthy, there's some people who need help because they're invalid or whatever, and everybody
right,
needs it. But the vast majority of people, you deny them everything by not allowing,
right.
by encouraging them not to work, by
right.
making it too easy.
Right.
And nobody wants to hit bottom, but I mean, it's
welfare,
you just
food
can't
stamps,
it, you just read
housing,
generation, another generation, another
right.
generation
of dependents.
Yeah,
we ought not be dependent.
The story when we were covering all the calamities in the Greek nation, where they were going, well, I don't want to pay you back. In fact, I want you to give me more money. I beg your pardon? To what end? I mean,
I don't want to pay back. I don't want to be responsible. Yeah, that's what Yahweh wants us. He wants us to be responsible. He wants us to be independent.
Yeah.
And by earning it, we don't. And Yahweh paid the price. He said, you know, in this passage,
by
myself, I did what was necessary. Fulfilled my promise by myself. But we don't avail ourselves of that unless we come to know, understand, accept, and trust and rely upon, to act upon, correctly act upon, what Yahweh is offering.
Well, if you can't very well walk away, if you weren't a little bit anxious about walking away from everything you know, it wouldn't be anything to walk away.
Correct. Yeah.
So
much to it.
Take some guts, you know. You walk away and you say, okay, I can even see there are some consequences of this. I didn't know there was so many people would think we're all nuts. But I don't care. I truly don't care.
Yeah. No, my friend Kirk, this is fun. I've enjoyed this thoroughly. We'll be in the Asaya 51-1 next program.
All righty.
Opportunity to learn
more. I'll be there. I'll be there. Take care of yourself. I'll see you soon. Shalom.
Shalom.